What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for December 8th, 2017. On today's show, we're going to dive into a bunch of news, including Justice League shaking up the DCEU, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, the first trailer has been released, a movie theater chain that actually likes MoviePass, Bryan Singer accused of sexual assault again, and the Best Documentary Oscar shortlist. And in the water cooler, we'll be talking about I, Tonya, Three Billboards, and The Shape of Water. This is Peter Serretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film Writers, Y Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
And Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
Join me over here at the water cooler, guys. I saw a couple movies this week I just wanted to talk about briefly. The first of which is I, Tonya. Have either of you seen this film?
I've been planning to see it this weekend.
I saw it. I saw it at TIFF, and I actually just rewatched the screener last weekend.
Well, this is the Craig Gillespie film about Tonya Harding. It's, what would you call it? It's not a biopic. It's kind of,
It's sort of a biopic. Yeah. It traces her from, like, her childhood onward.
Yeah.
It's like a very dark comedy is what I would describe it as.
Yeah, it was a lot more comedy than I was expecting because I've heard a lot of acclaim for Margot Robbie's Tonya Harding and Allison Jenny as her mother. And they are both fantastic, but it's a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be. It is very enjoyable. Paul Walter Hauser, which is a guy that is a Slash Film reader who I've run into in L.A. for the longest time, plays one of the funniest roles in this movie. I didn't know it was him until the credits came on. But it was very enjoyable. And I didn't know that was Sebastian Stan, the Winter Soldier, until the credits, too. So count me as stupid. I would recommend it to people, but I would say that it's a weird balance of comedy and kind of award drama. It doesn't quite get its footing there, but it's a really good and enjoyable film. I mean, Chris, you saw it twice. What made you want to revisit this film?
Well, I saw it at TIFF, and then my wife wanted to see it. Because my wife actually, she grew up in Massachusetts, and Nancy Kerrigan was actually one of her neighbors when she was growing up. So that was sort of the whole reason my wife wanted to watch it. So I rewatched it with her, and it's okay. I mean, the acting is very good. The performances are good. I think the tone is a little all over the place because it's trying to be funny, but it's also trying to present this sort of sympathetic portrait of Tonya Harding that goes beyond like the tabloid headlines, but at the same time it's also clearly kind of making fun of her, so it doesn't quite get the tone right.
Yeah, and at times it's trying to be Fargo, at other times it's trying to be a broad comedy. It's really weird in the tone, but I did enjoy it, so I can recommend it. That is I, Tonya. The other film I saw last night was Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which, by the way, why aren't they just calling this Three Billboards? Does it really have to be that long of a title? But this is the Martin McDonagh film. You know him. He did In Bruges and a couple other films. And it stars Frances McDormand as a woman who, a mother who has lost her daughter to murder and rape and is kind of challenging local authorities to solve that death. And boy, I was blown away by this film. I didn't expect to like this as much as I did. This film much more balances tone better than I, Tonya. Like the comedy bits in this are golden. Sam Rockwell is just amazing in this movie. Like, I'm kind of mad I didn't see this before my critics circle voting, because I would have voted for him as supporting actor. I just loved him in this. And Chris, you saw this as well?
No, I haven't seen this yet. I do have a screener of it. I'm probably going to watch it this weekend.
Yeah, no,
I've actually seen it.
Oh, what did you think, HT?
So I did enjoy it when I first saw it, but after sitting with it for a while, there are parts that bothered me, mostly in the treatment of everything, that all the issues that didn't deal with Frances McDormand's character and her rage about the lack of empathy for sexual assault. So the script was written before the Black Lives Matter movement, and you can definitely tell that there's sort of a tone-deaf handling of racial issues and that are prevalent in this small town in Missouri. And McDonagh himself is
I would argue that, though, like, if you went to a small town in Missouri now, even after this Black Lives Matter movement, it would be the same tone-deaf way.
Yeah, but it's, I think that the flippant way that it kind of treats it, and also the redemption arc for Sam Rockwell's character, is a little bit questionable. I enjoyed it when I was watching it because I felt like the tone really matched, and it was almost cartoonish in the way that it portrayed like this dark humor and poked fun at all these really serious issues, but at the same time bringing you empathy with it. But I think that it's not without its problems.
And I kind of love films that have a hero or a protagonist that kind of is going down a dark path and has a bad guy that is kind of, you know, coming, you know, kind of going towards the redemption, and is kind of like this parallel. I kind of enjoy movies that do that, but maybe like you, as I think more and more of this, maybe it won't be as high on my list, but I enjoyed it, and I would highly recommend this to anybody to see. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. HD, what have you been up to?
So yesterday I saw The Shape of Water, which is Guillermo del Toro's newest film. It's a dark fantasy starring Sally Hawkins as a mute lab worker who sort of stumbles upon the new lab denizen of the government lab where she works. And he is a fishman from the Amazons, played by Doug Jones, and thus begins a beautiful love story between the two of them. I'm a huge fan of Guillermo del Toro. I really love his lush, opulent approach to genre, and how he has such an unfiltered love of cinema, and that everything that I loved about Guillermo del Toro films comes to a peak in The Shape of Water. So it's not quite as opulent as his past films, but it makes up for it with its kinky weirdness and its many sort of intertextual subplots that go along with it. So there's like this outsider allegory with Sally Hawkins' character and all of her friends who are either minorities, or they're homosexuals, or they or like the creature she meets, the fish man. They all have this sort of outsider allegory going for it, and it's set in the 60s, so it really hones into the sort of repressive environment that takes place there. It's just such a beautiful movie. It's incredibly earnest and heartfelt, and a wonderful homage to classic cinema as well, which I did not expect. There's a couple of dance numbers which took me by surprise, but I was completely overjoyed by, and I think could best some of the musical numbers in La La Land. So I was blown away by Shape of Water. It's definitely one of my favorite movies of the year. I don't know if it'll beat Pan's Labyrinth as my favorite Guillermo del Toro movie, but it's up there. I loved it a lot.
Yeah, I would have to echo your thoughts on that. It's so beautiful. It's you know, it's not quite Pan's Labyrinth, but the atmosphere he creates and the relationships, and it just all feels, you know, it's fantastical but real. And and I think I said this a couple days ago before you saw this, but I do think some of the stuff in the later third of the film might go too far for some audiences. For me it was fine,
the audience I was with was very taken aback by the musical number, for example, because it felt so out of place with the rest of the dark fairy tale that was within the film. But I really liked it. I loved everything that Del Toro was throwing at the screen. So I highly recommend The Shape of Water.
And Chris, you saw that movie as well, right?
Yes, I also saw that at TIFF, and I also just rewatched that again on Screener. And yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you both said. It's one of my favorite movies. It's actually right now, it's currently number 2 on my list of best of the year.
Oh, wow. And we will be posting our best of the year later on this year, or maybe early next. So watch out for that on the site. We're currently in the beginning stages of that. But let's jump into the news. First up in the news, we've been talking about Justice League and that the troubled production of that film. It has now been revealed that the film originally featured Superman in his black suit from the comics. Of course, that would have been a darker take, and that gels with Zack Snyder. What do we know, Chris?
Right. So I remember before Justice League came out, I kept seeing a lot of fan theories, sort of hoping that when Superman came back from the dead, he'd be wearing the black suit that he wore in the comics after the death of Superman arc there. And apparently it wasn't just a fan wish, because the cinematographer of Justice League, Fabian Wagner, recently confirmed that they really did shoot scenes with Superman in the black suit. He doesn't say like where those scenes take place, and I don't really even know where they would take place, because he's, you know, in the movie Superman, you know, comes back from the grave and then he sort of just instantly becomes Superman again. So I'm not really sure where that would happen, but apparently they did shoot those scenes. So this is just yet another item to add to the growing list of deleted Justice League scenes.
And I wonder if like there is some remnants of this in the actual film. Like, I wonder if like they just color corrected his suit, because theoretically you could do that, right? Theoretically, it's just the black version of that suit, and you could kind of like Turner Movies, or who used to do that? Not Turner Movie Classics.
It was TNT. It was also owned by Ted Turner. So.
Yes. They would go into black and white movies and color them, and it looked really bad. But probably today, you could probably pull that off pretty well, I'm assuming. But obviously, his face, his CG face, was what everybody was complaining about. And, you know, Justice League did not do that well at the box office. I wouldn't say it was a complete disaster, but it's not a success. And this is shaking up the DC movie universe. HT, what do we know?
Yes. So we reported a couple weeks ago that Justice League was set to lose Warner Brothers up to $50 to $100 million due to the poor movie's box office performance. So because of this, Warner Brothers is taking drastic action and doing a huge shakeup, not only within the DCU, but at their executive offices as well. So the first big piece of news is that producer John Berg, who was initially at the head of the comic book movie table alongside Jeff Johns at Warner Brothers, is being removed. So he no longer has his spot at the head of that comic book division. He's still at Warner Brothers, but not in that capacity. So this was a big thing, because Warner Brothers was counting on Berg and Jeff Johns to sort of lead the DCEU into a new era. So now Jeff Johns is still at the top, but he for now. It seems like he'll be taking most of the the leadership role. So sort of the Kevin Feige of Warner Brothers DCEU. We'll see if he's up to the task. And other things is that they are considering to move the DC movies into the studio's main film production arm. So kind of like the model of what Sony and Fox do with their comic book films, and rather than Disney, which lets Marvel Studios kind of do their own thing. And another thing is that director Matt Reeves, who is doing the upcoming The Batman solo movie, is allegedly looking for a fresh talent to play Bruce Wayne in the upcoming Batman solo film. So that seems to put an end to the discussions on whether Ben Affleck is coming back for the role, because he's been sort of waffling for the past year on whether he's going to return, whether he's going to leave. So we have a couple rumors about who will play the part, the latest including John Hamm, which we don't know for sure at all. But that is a huge thing. So Ben Affleck likely won't reprise the role for The Batman, which I think takes place after Flashpoint, correct?
Yes. Or comes out after Flashpoint. We don't know the chronology of this whole thing. But it should say Flashpoint. I've talked to people who have, read that script, and from what I get, that's like a Justice League 1.5. It brings mm-hmm. back all the major talents. I think I've said this on the podcast before. So the way the script is now, it's kind of more of the same. So they're gonna, I think, unless Ben Affleck's going to be in that, which I think is still rumored that he could reprise his role as Batman, I think they're going to have to completely redo what their plans are for that movie. But mm-hmm. I don't think they're that far along in that. So
the rest of the slate is sort of remains the same, because they can't really – they've got the ball rolling with Aquaman, Wonder Woman 2, Flashpoint, Suicide Squad 2, so they can't really stop that ball. But who knows what other drastic measures Warner Brothers will take from now on.
The trailer for Jurassic World sequel Fallen Kingdom came out last night, because I think they were doing a panel at Comic-Con Brazil, which, by the way, I guess apparently has more people going to Comic-Con Brazil than Comic-Con in San Diego, which is insane. The trailer came out, and Ben Pearson, did a fantastic breakdown of the trailer, going frame by frame, many observations, some really cool stuff here that you can check out, including, by the way, I'm not sure if you guys noticed, but that at one point the raptor that was trained by Chris Pratt's character Owen, comes down and jumps onto a car. And that car is actually the car from Jurassic Park 1, the one that, falls down from the tree during that whole climactic sequence. So it looks like we are going to be returning to some of the locations of that first film. Anyways, so I have a feeling that I'm going to be the only one saying positive things about this trailer. So let me first start off with you guys. What did you think of this trailer, HT?
I thought it was fine. I can't say I was extremely excited for Jurassic World 2, because I really disliked the first Jurassic World. I thought it relied too heavily on the nostalgia components and was not a strong film on its own, and had way too many moments of unneeded, unnecessary brutality against random characters, such as the assistant played by Katie McGrath. And all the characters are flat in that film, but I won't go into my whole spiel against Jurassic World. The Jurassic World 2 trailer was exciting. It was sleek. I did really like the Jeff Goldblum cameo. I don't know if it'll be more than just a cameo, but
he's wearing an all black suit, and he's in this courtroom. I actually think this is fascinating, because it seems like they're setting him up as almost the bad guy for the third film, because he's mm-hmm. he's basically in a court. I guess reading between the lines of what he's saying there, he's basically saying, let the dinosaurs die in this, extinction mm-hmm. level event that's going to happen on this island, which is kind of crazy. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's in line with his own thoughts on the dinosaurs, because he's only had bad experiences with them. And as a chaos mathematician or whatever he was, he predicted that the dinosaurs were always going to be a bad call from the beginning. So it doesn't surprise me that he's in this role. And it's interesting putting a familiar face to the, I think, yeah, some sort of semi-villain role, because in this new franchise, we've been taught to empathize more with the dinosaurs and with Chris Pratt's dinosaur razor than we have in previous ones where they're just the monsters. So yeah, I thought it was a fine trailer. It had a good premise, I think, for a sequel, which might be better than past sequels of Jurassic Park, which this is a pretty low standard, to be fair. So we'll see. Yeah. That's my thoughts.
I was a fan of Jurassic World, so you know, I'm excited about this movie. Seeing this trailer, it seems like the story is kind of just in a setup to create these cool action moments and maybe some tense moments. We get some glimpses of that in the trailer as well. I'm not sure if, you know, it's going to be smarter than Jurassic World. I know that was a lot of people's problems, but it looks like it could be funner than Jurassic World. And it should be mentioned that Colin Trevorrow, the producer, writer, he says that everything in this trailer is from the first 57 minutes of the movie. So we're not even seeing the back half of this film in this trailer, which is kind of nuts, because looking at the trailer, you're like, there's a lot of action, and you're kind of like, they're spoiling too much. You know, they're showing Rexy and they're showing Blue and, you know, a lot of action. But apparently this only shows the first half of the movie, which is kind of crazy. Chris, what are your thoughts on this trailer?
It was okay. I don't hate Jurassic World. I think it's, you know, it's nowhere near Jurassic Park in terms of quality, but it's an entertaining enough film, I guess.
Can we all agree that Jurassic World is the best Jurassic Park film since Jurassic Park?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Jurassic Park 3 was okay. It had the talking raptor scene. I thought that was pretty cool. Where the raptor's on the plane and he says, Alan, that's a pretty great scene. I don't know.
Or the scene in Lost World where Jeff Goldblum's daughter does gymnastics to defeat the dinosaurs. Yeah, that was good.
God, I forgot about that.
But, I mean, this trailer, it's a well-made trailer. It looks entertaining. It looks like a big, dumb monster movie, which is pretty much what this franchise has turned into at this point. I will say I remain shocked that special effects from 1993 look better than the effects in this trailer for a film from now. And I know people will argue and say, oh, they're not completely finished yet, this is just a trailer, but that's the argument I always hear, and then I see the movie and I think, yeah,
to be fair, this movie isn't out for what, 6-7 months? Like,
no, I get it, but this is a very effects heavy trailer, so I'm gonna argue that if you're gonna include these scenes in your trailer, you should probably render them just a little bit better. I mean, just consider it. That's, you know, again, it's not like atrocious, but it's nothing compared to how they looked in 1993, which is, you know, they look real in that movie.
1993 just holds up so well.
Yeah, I actually was on the set of Jurassic World, and I was talking to John Knowles, who, you know, obviously the guy that helped create Photoshop, and he, you know, was in charge of a lot of the ILM stuff, including Jurassic Park. And I was talking to him on the set of that, just like offhandedly, not as an interview, like, why is the effects on that movie so good in, like, stuff nowadays doesn't compare? And he basically said that it's because they invested so much time and resources to make those things blend in with the practical. And there's actually, I forget how many shots of visual effects there are in that movie, but it's really just a tiny fraction. Like, it's a lot less than you probably remember it being. And a lot of the shots that you might even think are CG or actually, you know, a practical T-Rex and stuff like that. And obviously they're, you know, using, you know, they put the T-Rex scene in the dark and the rain to, you know, help cover up stuff. But I do agree with you. There's not much these days that seems to do better than some of the effects in that movie. Although I would argue, like, you see this footage, which seems to be like a video flashback of Owen meeting Blue as a baby. Am I reading that right, or is that like a new dinosaur? It seems to be.
I think it's a flashback.
It's a flashback. Yeah.
I don't know. That looked good to me. I'm not sure if that's CG or if that's animatronic, but it.
I think I remember reading that is actually a puppet. So I think that might explain why it looks better than, you know, a fully CGI creature.
Yeah, and I also thought the T-Rex in the back of the shipping container also looked good. But I don't know. I also did not think Tarkin looked bad in Rogue One. So take what I say with a grain of salt. I'm excited for this movie. I feel like in today's day and age where a lot of these kind of big epic sci-fi movies are trying to be like, you know, Chris Nolan smart and stuff. I'm fine with the big dumb dinosaur movie. I mean, like I want escapism a little bit, and as long as it's good, I want to have some good action. And with J.A. Bayona at the charge here, I'm interested to see how it plays off. And also, this trailer doesn't really so much, but we get to see a couple glimpses of the new cast in this film. Like, there's two new characters, and they look both interesting. Anyways, do either of you have any more to say about the Jurassic World trailer?
Nope.
Okay, then we are moving on to we've been talking about MoviePass for, you know, since we've been doing this podcast, generally, we've been talking about this MoviePass and their $9.99 subscription model. AMC has been very, very against this program, as have a lot of other movie exhibitors. But just yesterday, Studio Movie Grill released a press release announcing that they have MoviePass has single-handedly boosted their attendance. Chris, what do we know?
Yes, they don't say exactly, they don't give numbers about how much more increase it is, but Studio Movie Grill, which is one of those, it's sort of like, you know, Draft House where you can order food while you watch a movie, but they say in the year since they've agreed to work with MoviePass, they've seen a drastic uptick in average movie going. Even for smaller independent films, they use Lady Bird, the new Greta Gerwig film, as an example, that's like doing killer numbers for them. And they attribute that to just people using MoviePass. So they're apparently, Studio Movie Grill is apparently the one theater chain who is A-okay with MoviePass.
Kind of makes sense, because if you think about it, if you're going to, I'm not sure if, either of you have gone to like draft houses. Do you have like any kind of those kind of options in your area?
I have something called the Angelica. It's not quite as indie as Draft House, but it shows a fair amount of both indie and mainstream theaters and movies, and has food and gourmet drinks. So kind of on the same level.
What about you, Chris?
I do not have a Draft House near me. They did open a Studio Movie Grill, not really near me, but in Pennsylvania, but I have yet to go there.
Well, I can tell you just from my experience at Draft House, you know, going to South By and Fantastic Fest, it's hard to see a movie at like a place like the Draft House without like ordering a drink or food. And I feel like, you know, I can easily go see a movie at my local multiplex without ordering anything. But once you sit down there and there's a menu in front of you, and you know, you could just write cookies on a piece of paper and put it in front of you and it magically appears. And I think for a theater chain like that, that is getting more people to go into the movies, you're basically getting more people to come into your restaurant. So I could definitely see how, you know, MoviePass would be a huge advantage over a traditional multiplex. But I think you said that Studio Movie Grill has a partnership with MoviePass?
Yeah, I believe that just means they agreed to work with them to, you know, to use the card there.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, you always have to be skeptical about motives of like a press release like this. It seems like, you know, their ideals kind of align and their financial motives align a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't want to accuse anyone of lying, but like
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like they, yeah.
No, but what I was going to say is, like I said, in the press release they sent out, they didn't really give like any numbers. So it's not really clear how much it's increased, but they just say it has increased.
Yeah. And We've been talking these last few days about Bryan Singer. He was fired from Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen biopic. And days later, we have learned that he has been accused of sexual assault again. HD, what do we know?
So a new lawsuit comes 3 days after Bryan Singer was fired from Bohemian Rhapsody. This lawsuit alleges that Singer raped a 17-year-old boy in 2003 at a yacht party. So this man, who was 17 in 2003, accused him of coercing, of forcing oral and anal sex on him, and then attempting to coerce him into silence by saying that he was a producer in Hollywood and that he could help him get into acting as long as he never said anything about the incident. So this is not the first time, like you said, that Bryan Singer has been accused of sexual assault. It happened, there was a case a couple years ago when Michael Ian sued Bryan Singer, alleging that he forced him to have sex at parties and drugged him. And then there was a sort of controversy in one of his earlier films in which he apparently was accused of sexual sort of misconduct in a shower scene in which he forced his underage teen actress to strip. So there's been a lot of controversy about sexual assault and sexual misconduct that has followed Bryan Singer over the years, especially considering the pool parties, the wild pool parties, quote unquote, that he often throws that are often populated by underage boys. So it's something that I feel like people were waiting for the penny to drop after Bohemian Rhapsody fired him from the set. And even though he said that it was because he wanted to help an ailing parent versus the Bohemian Rhapsody's explanation that he was unprofessional and was late to set and didn't even appear to set for a couple of days. So it's an ongoing story. We'll see if this goes anywhere, but it's a part of a whole other part of this whole new sexual assault and sexual misconduct awareness that's happening in Hollywood right now.
The Harvey Weinstein effect is what they're calling it. And, you know, it should be mentioned that there are a lot of cynical people covering this business that believe that Bryan Singer being let go from this movie was a preemptive move that, you know, obviously he's had a past, an accused past of doing like this and like not showing up on set and that kind of thing. And, you know, obviously he's gotten away with it in the past. It does seem a little coincidental that he gets fired a couple days before this lawsuit is filed, almost as if, you know, the studio knew that this was coming. And but who knows? I know some high up Hollywood journalists believe that that might be the bigger reason. But I think it's fair to say that filmmakers' behavior, you can't get away with what they used to, either with the sexual assault, with the, you know, his power moves, these, you know, manic activity. Like, you know, you're going to be more accountable in Hollywood 2018. So, but moving on from that, let's get to award season. I know the Academy has announced a short list of the best documentary feature films. And I know that we are sometimes criticized on this podcast and on the site of not covering the littler films. So I thought, Chris, since you wrote this article up for the site, if you could give us a glimpse at the best documentary features that we should be looking out for and maybe be checking out leading up to the award season.
Right. Well, I will say one documentary that I'm very surprised is not on here and I would recommend is a documentary called Dawson City Frozen Time, which is great and really should have been nominated, but that just got added to Filmstruck. So seek that out if you can. But some other things that have been that are on the short list to be nominated are Ex Libris, which is a documentary all about the New York Public Library. What else? There's the Inconvenient Truth sequel, which is called An Inconvenient Sequel. So there you go.
I saw that one. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that yet. No,
it's good? I mean, it's the information is good, but it's very kind of by the numbers, and it's not I want to say remarkable in any way other than that it kind of covers this whole bit about that Paris Treaty that kind of just got overturned by it, or, you know, like that Trump was trying to overturn right at the beginning of his presidency. So I don't know. I'm surprised that, like, what were the other ones on this list?
There's a film called Icarus, which is very timely because it's all about the Russian sports doping scandal, which is pretty much what resulted in Russia being banned from the upcoming Olympics. So that's very timely. That's actually on Netflix right now, if you're interested in watching it. There's a lot of stuff on here that is officially like Netflix films, which I thought was interesting because a lot of people were worried that Netflix wouldn't be considered awards contenders, but I guess the one category they're able to get in on is documentaries. There's at least four Netflix movies on this short list.
I'm kind of surprised that that Gawker documentary isn't on here. That's another Netflix release, I believe, right?
Right.
Because that seems kind of very relevant. But have you seen any of the other ones on this list, Chris?
I actually have not. I have the screener for Jane, which is about Jane Goodall. So I intend to watch that very soon. So, but yeah.
Yeah, I know the one I want to see most out of the ones I have not seen on this list is Icarus, which you've mentioned. But we will have to see as this gets narrowed down to the nominations, which will come out in January?
January 23rd is when they're announced.
Yeah, usually when I think we're at Sundance or something. But okay, that does it for the news for today. Chris, where can we find more of your work online?
I'm at slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter at cevangelista413.
HD, where can we find you?
You can read my work at slashfilm.com. I'm on Twitter at htranbui, and I have a podcast, The Millennial Falcon Podcast, on iTunes.
You can find me at slashfilm.com, at slashfilm on Twitter. You can find this podcast published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. If you want to send us an email, send it to peter@slashfilm.com. That could be feedback, criticism, a question for the mailbag, praise. We like praise. And if you want to praise us, go to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review. That helps us out quite a bit. Spread the word, tell your friends, and we will see you on Monday.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.